The beginning of the administration of Valerius Gratus, the fourth imperial governor of Judea, will be remembered as rent by political agitations in Jerusalem, if indeed it be not the precise time of the opening of the final quarrel between the Jew and the Roman. Judea had been a Roman province 80 years and more, ample time for the Caesars to study the idiosyncrasies of the people, time enough, at least, to learn that the Jew, with all his pride, could be quietly governed if his religion were respected. Proceeding upon that policy, the predecessors of Gratus had carefully abstained from interfering with any of the sacred observances of their subjects. But he chose a different course. Almost his first official act was to expel Hannas from the high priesthood and give the place to Ishmael, son of Phabus. A month after Ishmael took the office, Gratus found it necessary to visit him in Jerusalem. When from the walls, hooting and hissing him, the Jews beheld his guard enter the north gate of the city and march to the Tower of Antonia, they understood the real purpose of the visit. A full cohort of legionaries was added to the former garrison, and the keys of their yoke could now be tightened with impunity. If the procurator deemed it important to make an example, alas for the first offender. In one of the gardens of the palace on Mount Zion, the time was noonday in the middle of July, when the heat of summer was at its highest. Not far from a fountain, there was a small pool of clear water, nourishing a clump of cane and oleander, such as grow on the Jordan and down by the Dead Sea. Between the clump and the pool, unmindful of the sun shining full upon them in the breathless air, two boys, one about 19, the other 17, sat engaged in earnest conversation. They were both handsome, and, at first glance, would have been pronounced brothers. Both had hair and eyes black. Their faces were deeply browned, and sitting, they seemed of a size proper for the differences in their ages. The elder was bareheaded. A loose tunic, dropping to the knees, was his attire complete, except sandals and a light blue mantle spread under him on the seat. The costume left his arms and legs exposed, and they were brown as the face. Nevertheless, a certain grace of manner, refinement of features, and culture of voice decided his rank. The tunic, of softest woolen, gray-tinted, at the neck, sleeves, and edge of the skirt bordered with red, and bound to the waist by a tasseled silken cord, certified him the Roman he was. And if in speech he now and then gazed haughtily at his companion and addressed him as an inferior, he might almost be excused, for he was of a family noble even in Rome, a circumstance which in that age justified any assumption. In the terrible wars between the first Caesar and his great enemies, a Messala had been the friend of Brutus. After Philippi, without sacrifice of his honor, he and the conqueror became reconciled. Yet later, when Octavius disputed for the empire, Messala supported him. Octavius, as the Emperor Augustus, remembered the service and showered the family with honors. Among other things, Judea being reduced to a province, he sent the son of his old client or retainer to Jerusalem, charged with the receipt and management of the taxes levied in that region. And in that service the son had since remained, sharing the palace with the high priest. The youth just described was his son, whose habit it was to carry about with him all too faithfully a remembrance of the relation between his grandfather and the great Romans of his day. The associate of Messala was slighter in form, and his garments were of fine white linen, and of the prevalent style in Jerusalem. A cloth covered his head, held by a yellow cord, and arranged so as to fall away from the forehead down low over the back of the neck. An observer skilled in the distinctions of race, and studying his features more than his costume, would have soon discovered him to be of Jewish descent. The forehead of the Roman was high and narrow, his nose sharp and aquiline, while the lips were thin and straight, and his eyes cold and close under the brows. The front of the Israelite, on the other hand, was low and broad, his nose long with expanded nostrils.